I just heard something about live stream, so I wasn't sure what's going on. Hopefully, I'm doing all right with the presentation.
Yeah, I think things should be okay.
Okay, very good. So with that, let's go to the next slide here. Oh, looks like we're stuck. Having a little technical problem with the slide sharing. For some reason, I'm not able to get to slide number 7. Okay, there it goes. Maybe just take a little time there. So essentially, what that translates to in the business world is that there's so many different applications and we could apply machine learning to. Some of the more well-known examples, such as fraud detection, right? You might be processing millions or even billions of credit card transactions. How do you catch the bad guys? Only happens, you know, once in a million transactions. Some of the things that you probably cannot anticipate and build, you know, conditional logic to. But if you have seen a lot of data and you're able to sort of initially manually identify the fraud, maybe you can teach the computer algorithm to figure out what are the patterns that we're looking for, and then when next time you feed it with new data, the algorithm will be able to quickly figure out if this is a fraudulent transaction or not. Hopefully by that definition, you know, we realize that there are certain class of problems that is very well suited for machine learning. Essentially, we probably are looking at sizable historical data, and ideally, if we're looking for a labeled data so that we already know from a historical data perspective what are the prediction results that we're looking for, then we can use that to train the algorithm. And also, what we're looking for perhaps is not a 100% definitive answer, but statistical probability. If we have a very high probability of something that happens, then we say, you know, maybe statistically that is significant. Those type of class of problems are very well suited for machine learning. Eventually, the reason that we started this journey almost from 5, 6 years ago, building machine learning in the cloud, these are sort of the high level targets that we're looking for. One is reducing complexity. There are obviously already lots of softwares and tools packages on the marketplace, but generally speaking, it takes a lot of effort to learn, a lot of skills that you have to acquire to be able to leverage them efficiently. And many of those application packages or solutions are very expensive, not only from cost perspective, but also just from the acquisition. The human capital cost perspective. And also, generally speaking, when you get a result of a prediction model, it takes time to actually turn that into a usable web service. So time to market is very critical as well. And then on top of that, we're in the world of big data. We're collecting massive amount of data. So in order to actually train the algorithm, you probably need a lot of compute power. And cloud is very well suited, of course, in this area. Really, we build Azure Machine Learning to address all these four goals. And we have actually gone to public preview last summer, but just past February, we've gone general available. And these are the sort of the new features. If you have experienced Azure Machine Learning before, these are the new things that we've added in GA time. And we will spend the rest of the time in demos and hopefully show you a quick tour of all these new capabilities. And these are, frankly, a very small subset of the things that we lit up. So at least I think we can give you a flavor of what they can do. At this point, I am going to share my screen with you. OK. Okay, so hopefully you can all see my screen now. Essentially, the Azure Machine Learning, for those of you who are new to this offering, is a browser-based application. You don't need to install anything on your desktop. All you need is a browser, and we certainly support the popular browsers like IE, Chrome, Safari, and so on and so forth, and Firefox. You can basically do a Bing search on Azure Machine Learning, and where you land this page, and you can click on Get Started Now. And also, we have an offering that essentially is free for you to kind of try out Azure Machine Learning. All you need is a Microsoft account, or what's formerly known as Live ID. So once you click on this button, you will land in the Azure Machine Learning Studio. We have a concept of a workspace. So if you're using the free account, you will basically have a free workspace here, and everything you do here is free of charge. And we do have some technical limitations enforced in the free account, such as the size of the data set we can process, or a number of modules that you can include in an experiment. But generally speaking, it's a full-featured functionality that for you to experiment and try out. If you want to actually get a supported workspace, then you can probably go into your Azure subscription here, and you will be able to actually create a workspace that is associated with your Azure subscription. And this way, you can get full support and SLA with the machine learning models that you're building, and also the web service that you're going to be creating. All right, so let's head back to our machine learning studio interface here. So the first thing I want to show you is that we've got feedback that people say that it's for folks who are new to data science. This looks pretty intimidating in terms of the number of modules and different UI controls on the screen. So what we built is actually a guided tour. So in this, essentially, it's a series of help bubbles that helps you understand different areas in the screen. What you do is a general kind of workflow. And then you can kind of click through this tour and then sort of understand what different areas of the screen, what are the components in that are in that screen. So this is sort of a general tour. But then we also include something called guided experiment or experiment tutorial. Click on this second tile. We will have actually a full-blown machine learning workflow that's already imported into your workspace. And then essentially, this is for predicting an individual income. And then you can click through the help. And understand the steps of actually a very, very prototypical Azure Machine Learning workflow, from getting the data set to cleaning the data set to split, and then to use machine learning algorithms to train the model and eventually scoring the model. So hopefully that will help a lot of people sort of just get familiar with the machine learning if this is the first time they start to use this tool. So I'm actually going to start from scratch and show you how we are building a machine learning workflow. Before I do that, I also want to point out that we have completely remodeled what we call this plus new experience. So you will see that all these beautiful tiles, that each of them represent actually a Microsoft sample. And you can get much more details if you just if you're interested, for example, of this anomaly detection credit risk sample. You can mouse over this, and then you can click on this link called View in Gallery, which I will talk about in a few minutes. But also, you can certainly just open this experiment directly in the studio. So I'm going to actually start with a blank experiment, because I figured the best way to learn it is from scratch. So the first thing I will do is to actually drag in a data set that I have created previously. So the way that you create data set is actually come here, click on data set. Looks like the screen is refreshing, taking a little time to do that. So you can actually upload a data set into the machine learning studio. We do support many different data formats, as you can see here. So I already did that. But the other thing you could also do, this obviously is only reasonable for small data sets that you can upload over an HTTP. But what we can also do is using a reader module. And reader module is much more feature complete in that we can read data source from just a simple HTTP endpoint or a Hive database or a SQL Azure database and so on and so forth. And you can also basically put your file on the Azure Blob storage. And we also support not only CSV files, but even Excel files. This is a new capability we added supporting Excel worksheet. So I'm not going to do that for this demo. So I'm going to delete that. And then I've got my data. And you can look at it right away to visualize this data. And actually, before I do that, let me just show you what this data really looks like. In a familiar format. If I click on download, I can actually open this data set in Excel so that you can get a good look at what we're looking at here. So this is a very, very simple Excel sheet. As you can see, we have some demographic data about some individual users, in this case, customers, and their age, gender, body mass index, number of children they have, and if this person is a smoker or not, and which region of the United States this person will come from. We also have the last column, which is the medical charges for this particular individual from last year. So what we want to do for this particular experiment is to build a machine learning model such that we can predict the medical charges. And this obviously is very useful for actuary computing in the healthcare industry, in health insurance industry. So that's the data that we're dealing with here, and we uploaded into Machine Learning Studio. What we can do is actually just quickly visualize this data. As you can see, we basically are displaying the top 100 or so rows, and then you can actually also see the histogram of individual column if they're number-based. And you can also actually draw a box chart. So in this case, for example, I would say if I draw a box chart on this medical charges, clearly the smokers, yes, generally speaking, has higher medical expenses for my historical data. So that makes a lot of sense, of course. And you can kind of play with the data this way. But in our case, what we can also do is to say, perhaps instead of putting them into 10 bins, I can put them in two bins and then say, maybe I will categorize the medical charges for my users as a low medical charge that is lower than $33,000 and high medical charge that's anything that's higher than $33,000, I will categorize as high. So in this case, we know that we have about 12% of the population has high medical charges. So maybe we can build a binary classification model so that we can predict the data we receive, whether this person have high medical charge or low medical charge, and then maybe we can set the premium accordingly. So that's sort of the genesis of what we're going to do here. So the first thing we can do here is perhaps show you the R script capabilities. So we can actually let you enter any arbitrary R scripts here, and we can also import external R packages. So for folks who are familiar with R, obviously this is really helpful. I'm going to go to my cheat sheet and then just copy and paste some very simple R program here. Essentially, what I'm saying is that let's get the data and then set a new column called level, and we set everybody to high. And then we say for the medical charges that are lower than $33,000, we then say that the category of that level is low. And then we just simply output that data. Actually, we should probably also get rid of charges. So this way, when we do prediction, we don't actually see the charges. We only see high and low as our label. So at this point, I can actually just click on run, and this is what happens is that behind the scene, we have Azure machine virtual machines that are pre-provisioned, and we'll start to run the experiment. And within a few seconds, you should see that we have the result here. And if I visualize this result, hopefully you will see that now we've got rid of, oh, it looks like it's the charges. I missed the character. But we have a new column here. Now it's called level. And you can see we have, you know, about 12% of people are classified as high. So this is our labeled column. This is the prediction target. So now our goal is to build a model to predict this level column. So we're going to continue. Let me just get rid of this charges column here. Make sure I got that right. And then what we can do is to do a split so that we can take that data and then split it to 70% to 30%, and then we give it a random seed so that the split is random. Then we will do train the model. Okay. And then we can pick an algorithm. So this particular problem is a very simple classification problem. And in fact, we're trying to predict a column that has only two outcomes, high or low. So this is a binary, or as we call it, two-class classification. So these are the two-class classification algorithms that are included in the Machine Learning Studio. I'm just going to randomly pick one here. And you can actually very easily pick different algorithms and tweak the parameters and compare results. But for now, I'm simply just going to connect this to connect the algorithm to the train model. And then in the train model, I will say the column I'm trying to predict is, oh, it looks like the, I'm going to say level because the schema propagation hasn't happened yet. So I'm going to just say the luck. Okay, maybe I'll have to force it. Okay. About that, let me just force the schema propagation by running it so that our column picker knows the column we're trying to predict. In fact, you know what, at this point, maybe we'll save some time and flip to the one that I pre-built already, because there's just a few more steps left. So we are doing a split, and then we did a train model that basically selects the column that we're trying to predict, and we pick the algorithm, and then we feed it to a score model so that we can compare the result of the trained model, which is the 70% of data comparing to the 30% of data the model has not seen before by incorporating that from the other branch of the split. And then eventually we can evaluate this model. And so this is sort of a complete, you know, step-by-step workflow of the machine learning work algorithm execution. The thing that we added most recently was this idea of publishing to web surveys more easily. So if I click on this update scoring experiment, it's actually going to automatically add the web service input and output port for me. And you notice that it actually simplified my diagram by saving my model into a trained model in here and then added web service input and output flow. So that I know that this essentially, when I operationalize this model, this is how the data is going to flow on the web service side. And I can actually also flip this switch to see more clearly how web service data flow is going to happen like this. At this point, I can actually, if I run it, I can publish this web service. I have already done that, so let me go back to the web service that I published here. Obviously, now with the web service API being ready, you can see that we sort of show you the endpoint and also the expected input data and expected output. And also, we give you source code in C Sharp, Python, and R. So you know, if you're a good programmer, then you copy and paste, which is kind of my experience. So it's very easy to get started by calling these APIs. But on top of that, we also added the capability of using essentially burying this API logic in an Excel worksheet. So I can simply click on this to download an Excel sheet. And this Excel file has macros enabled in there already. So let me enable the content. As you can see that this would, once it comes up, it is essentially, it's automatically built for me with the input columns and the output, which is the scoring label and probability. So if we say, if this person is a 35-year male, so every time you actually type things in the Excel cell, we are in the background calling that API for prediction. So if this 35 male with a body mass index of 30 with two children, it's a little lagging because this is a free offering, so we have some throttling going on with APIs. And if this person is not a smoker and it's from Southwest, and you can see that we think the medical charge for this person based on our prediction model is very low, and we have very, very high confidence that this is going to be a very low medical charge. So we can adjust our premium accordingly, of course. So let me just show you one other thing before I hand it over to my colleague, Sebastian. One of the things that we added is this idea of gallery. So let me just click on this and go into gallery. So this essentially is a, think of it as Facebook for machine learning experiments. So we can have everybody contributing content here. So you can look for anything that's related to the business problem that you're trying to address. So suppose you run a winery. You can come here and find a wine quality prediction classification algorithm that's been published by someone, and we have obviously views and ratings and so on and so forth. And you can actually open this right in Machine Learning Studio. And in addition, you can certainly publish it too as well. So let's try doing that. So let me go back to the experiment that we created earlier. And then we can get back to the view, publish to gallery. So let's hit this button here, and we say this is going to be Cambridge test, and I can tag it. So this might be a medical charge and premium level. So these are the tags that will become indexable, of course, in the search in the gallery. And I can provide some summary text and some descriptions here. And I could even also either upload a cover image, or I can pick from a stock image library. Like this one looks like a medical thing for me. And then that's it. It's that simple. So now this experiment is going to get published into the Gallery Studio. And while that is going on, we can, OK, so that now it's finished. I can actually check this button, and it will let me take me into the gallery. And you will see that it's been published. And I can add additional context here. So this is kind of going back to the Plus New experience. The Plus New experience, every single one of these cards you see, these are Microsoft examples. So if you want to learn about SQL Transform, which is a new capability we added, for example, in here, you can open this directly in Studio, or you can view this in Gallery, and you will see, you know, very detailed documentation on this particular capability we just added. And then you can click on Open in Studio. Then we will actually open this particular example or experiment that someone shared in the gallery back into Studio. While that comes up, experience a little delay here. let me just flip back here. So this will essentially copy that experiment from Gallery into your ML Studio to be able to then you can build on top of it. All right, so that's about covered the things that I like to talk about. So I'll transition to Starshin at this point.
This is Jason. If I could just ask a couple questions that have come in that relate to the content that you were presenting there, and then we'll hand it over to the second portion. The first is a very simple question. To navigate to actually what you have there showing now, the tile tutorial screen, can you just show how one would navigate to that?
Absolutely. It's sorry, I went a little bit too fast, but this plus new button here, that's on the lower left corner here. If I click on plus new, it'll show me this grid of cards. Looks like the screen refresh is a little slow here. But that's essentially how you do it.
Very good. The second question that came in is it possible in the evaluation score to figure out how much specific feature has influenced the result? For example, some features might be included in a data set which has no influence on the result. Does that make sense?
That feature is coming really soon.
Okay.
I'll let Dustin speak about that one.
Yep, that's good. We're working on exactly that feature. There's an algorithm based on feature permutation that's going to get that's we're implementing it. It should be live pretty soon.
Very good. Well, there's a couple other questions, but I want to make sure, Sudarshan, that you have time, so I'll hand it over to you, and then with the whatever time we have remaining, we'll answer the additional questions.
Sure. Let's see. Okay, I think the screen sharing is working now. Okay, everybody, like Jason and Hai said, I'm Sudarshan. I'm a dev manager in the Azure ML Studio team, and in particular, my team and I work on implementing all the building blocks that you see in Studio. So, as you can see, we have blocks for all sorts of data format conversions, getting data in, extracting features out of them, cleaning missing values, performing joins, training the actual models, and also performing scoring and evaluation, cross validation, visualization, all the good stuff. So as we probably have close to 100 modules in our palette. Occasionally, you might want to do things that are not supported by the modules we provide. Thus far, our extension story was based on R. So if you wanted to apply a special feature transformation algorithm that we did not provide, or you wanted to write your own, you had your own custom feature engineering logic that you wanted to bring in that was already written in R, you could just open up the execute R script box that, like I did in the previous set of demos, and then write your R script, and you would get your features out. One of the nice capabilities is that our code could be operationalized both in the studio in the studio UI as well as in a web service. So you could stand up a web service on Azure that could be backed by our code. So when we made that functionality available about 6 or 7 months ago, there was lots of demand from our users to also support Python, because like R, Python is an extremely popular language for doing data munging, feature processing, all sorts of machine learning, and there's a huge community behind packages such as NumPy and Pandas that we wanted to allow our users to leverage. So as of GA, a couple of weeks ago, we introduced the ability for you to bring in Python code as part of your experiments in Azure ML Studio, and also operationalize these as web services as part of the endpoints that Hai showed. So you could in fact have one of the spreadsheets that Hai was able to download that is backed by Python code running on the cloud, which is pretty cool. The other kinds of cool things you can do in the studio are basic feature processing and feature transformations and also visualization. So if you have if there are certain kinds of plots that we don't currently support that are easily done using Python packages like Matplotlib, you can do them fairly easily too. So here is a simple example. There we have one of our data sets that are passed in, and we write a bit of Python code that essentially describes the data set. So this would be very similar to what you get when you right-click and view the output of a data set. So you'll notice that this is just stock pandas and NumPy and other packages that are common in the community. There are no Microsoft or Azure ML specific extensions required. So the intent is that you'll be able to test these scripts out on your local Linux or Mac machine or Windows machine using a compatible Python runtime, and then just plop it into Azure ML and it'll just work. So here, for example, I have a Python script that computes some statistics, and if I run it, it will run for a second, and voila, I can right-click and visualize, and sure enough, it tells me the basic statistics of my data set. There you go. The quantiles, the mean, and the standard deviation. If you have missing values, it shows that too. Moving on to a more advanced example. We have the ability to not just shape your data and understand it using a lot of the functionality that are possible using Pandas and NumPy. You can also export visualizations, and the visualizations blend in with the rest of the system. So, for example, here is an example that just generates a really simple sine curve. So what I do here is I create a set of points from minus pi to pi, sampled by 0.01. I then compute the sine, which NumPy does in an instant, and then I plot it, and once I plot it, the one difference between the way plots work in R and Python is that in R you just plot and we magically are able to capture all the plots and show them out to you. In Python you have to save them to files, but then you can save as many files as you want. So you capture all of them, stitch them together, and send it back to the studio. So once you've saved it, I run this little experiment. And once again, the output comes back in a flash, and then I can visualize it and see, oh yeah, cool. There you go. There's the nice fine curve plotted using Matplotlib. So that's the easy stuff. If you think through it a little bit, you can, of course, this capability can be extended in fairly powerful ways. An example is actually looking at correlations between features in your data set. So one capability that our users like to use a lot is this notion of creating a scatterplot matrix, which essentially takes two sets of features and compares them to see, you know, which features are most correlated with the others. So in Pandas, it's a couple of lines of code to do that. So what I have done here is taken my favorite IRIS data set, and I have written a small script that will pop up in a second that creates a scatterplot matrix. So let me highlight that right there. As you can see, that creates a scatterplot plot matrix. As you can see, it's just a single line of code, if you know what the single line should be. And then you plot it and write it to a file. Then the nice thing about all these transformations and plotting Flutter functionality is that you hardly ever have to read documentation to figure these things out. Stack Overflow or other community forums have tons and tons of really useful recipes. I typically use them, test them out locally, send them, copy and paste it on the script box, and things usually go just fine. So here, once you submit the experiment and run this, let me open the visualization port, and there you go. You get this really cool scatterplot matrix, the diagonals, which so it essentially fits a normal distribution to your numerical entries, and you can clearly see most of these things are not normally distributed except for one, and then you can see if there are obvious separators between the class and the label that you're trying to predict and the kinds of some of the features you have about your dataset. So far, so good. Okay. The other so one thing you will notice is that so far we have not spoken about any of the machine learning capabilities in our system. We have close to 30 different algorithms for doing classification, regression, multi-class classification, and clustering, and principal component analysis. We also have, and these range from all the way from the simple perceptron models all the way to deep neural nets. So typically, the way it works out is that you spend a lot of time building features, evaluating your models, and then fine-tuning them using parameter sweep, and then you use scripting languages like R. You use like R to actually evaluate the results or to visualize the output in some way. One of the things you can do is, in the way you've structured all these modules, is that they are completely swappable. You can swap one module for the other, and the rest of the experiment works just fine, just as you would expect. So here is an example where I have actually created a model in R, a naive-based model in R, use our train block, our train module to actually do the training, our score module to actually do the scoring, and then use the scikit-learn package in Python to do compute the final evaluation metric. So this is like this meta experiment that combines all the different algorithms, both the ones that we've written ourselves, those that are written by our community, and those that are written by the Python community, all bundled together in one experiment. And of course the cool part about this is that you can publish this as a web service, and it will work just as you expect. So here is the Python script, and as you can see, all it does is it gets. Let me visualize the output. So as you can see, the R code outputs the classes and the probabilities, whether something is true or false, and the confidence, which in this case it does a pretty good job, and the Python code computes metrics like the accuracy and position recall, and also points on the R sequence. So just as I did for the previous examples, I can say visualize, and there the R sequence pops out just as again as expected. Cool. The other sets of demos I wanted to give were around this notion of operationalizing transformations. So a typical use case is where I have data, in which case, in this particular case, my two-class data set, and I want to normalize it. And the way I normalize is I normalize it based on the z-score, which essentially subtracts the mean from this data set and then divides by the standard deviation. So the idea is to have zero mean and standard deviation of one. So once I, as you can see, this normalized data module outputs the normalized data. The issue that you do run into is that when you want to apply the same transformation at prediction time, or when your model is running as part of a larger web service, you need access to the means and standard deviations that were computed based on the original training data set. And thus far, we did not have a mechanism to do that. So what you had to do was you had to normalize, you had to compute the mean and standard deviations outside. You had to you had to write some bit of R code to do the necessary math, and then you had to replicate that in training and scoring. A capability that we delivered as part of GA or slightly before were transformations that automatically carry states between training and scoring experiments. So to illustrate what I mean, I have the same experiment but slightly expanded. There you go. So I have this data that is split between training and scoring data sets, and when I connect the normalized, when I connect the output of the normalized data block to the applied transformation block, what exactly happens is that we flow the means and standard deviations in the normalization method directly to the applied transform. So when applied transform performs normalization, it just knows that in this case, it doesn't need to compute the means and standard deviations all over again. It just needs to take the existing computed values and just apply the function and return the output. So the applied transformation paradigm ensures that you have consistent state that is getting passed between your training and prediction experiments. Of course, this is just a single pattern, and normalize is just one of the transforms that is supported in this manner. What we have done is there is now a family of transformations that follow exactly this paradigm. So things like cleaning missing data, which just remembers the algorithm that you used for removing missing values or imputing missing values in your data, normalized that we just saw, quantization, so this remembers all the number of bins and the bin intervals, PCA, which remembers the number of principal components and also the singular vectors, and Fisher LDA, which remembers the discriminant vectors as well. And as you can see, each of these produces a second output, which is the transform that gets carried between training and prediction. So that was a really quick tour of the transformation support. I have one more set of your transformations that we have recently provided, and that is around the ability to apply SQL operations to data sets. So as Hai showed in the gallery experiments, he alluded to this new capability that we provided that allows you to apply SQL transformations to existing data. So there's a use case for this is when someone who's not quite familiar with R and Python wants to apply relational operators that are most naturally expressed in SQL, instead of trying to figure it out in R or do something equivalent to Python, we give people the ability to write SQL scripts. So you can pass one of our data sets in. It can be from any data source, uploaded from your local desktop or an Excel file that you got from an Azure blob, and then you can write queries against the data set. And these queries are pretty much the full SQL language. There are advanced features like stored procedures, of course, that are not supported, but effectively all the common transformations can be fully incurred on the script block. So here's a really simple example where I have a, I just like Hai's data set, there is a automobile data set that contains, you know, the various features about a car and how much it costs, and all I do is I filter the data sets, filter all the cars that cost more than $15,000. And when you run this transformation through, you get let me run this really quick. The output comes out, and sure enough, you can see. You can see that you can clearly see that the minimum value of all the rows left in my data is like more than 15,000. Cool. And of course, this is SQL, so group bys and joins are all supported. We allow you to pass in up to three tables, which it seems to be about the right number that captures most of the common use cases in machine learning. So where typically where you have to join your ratings data set against your users data set and your items data set. That was our prototypical use case that covers a lot of common users. So then you just refer to the tables in the order in which they're connected. So as an example, let me show you an experiment that creates a data set that can be fed into one of our recommendation modules. So here I have a restaurant data features about a customer, which has things like the user ID and a bunch of attributes. We then have features about our restaurant. Which again has an ID and a bunch of attributes, and then we have the ratings that rate, which essentially how much what rating a user gave the restaurant, and so you can as you can see there is a join that happens between the user data, the restaurant data, and the ratings data, and then that populates the training feature, and so you can pass this to our recommender split, train your Matchbox recommender, operationalize it, and the thing does what you expect. I think that is all I had in terms of demos. I think we finished right on time. So we can either show more demos or of new features that we've added, or we can use the rest of the time to answer questions. Thanks.
We've had lots of questions that have been coming in over the Q&A widget, and Hai has graciously been answering all of those as they come in. So there's actually not a long backlog here. So if others have questions, feel free to send them in right now. Did you have any other demos that you'd like to show while we're waiting for any additional questions?
Yeah, the one thing that we did add fairly recently is the ability to tune hyperparameters in the model. So let me open an experiment like that. Okay, so here I have a new experiment. So previously, what would happen is when you wanted to, as you can see, these models have a number of parameters that you can adjust, and one of the ways in which you get a good model is you try different parameters and then you evaluate your scores and see if they are better by changing the parameter. Previously, we provided this module called the soup parameters. That you could connect your base model to, and then it would based on heuristics sweeps of take a reasonable set of choices for each parameter, sample them so it runs in a reasonable amount of time, and then give you the best model. One of the things our users wanted to do is to customize the sets of values that were being sucked over. So what we provided for every learner with sweepable parameters, there's this mode that we provide now. So instead of a single parameter means that it just has one sets of it provides one set of attributes that one set of knobs that cannot be tweaked. But
you can provide what is called a parameter range now. And so if you use a, if you choose a parameter range, it gives you a, the ability to tweak the sets of it gives you the ability to tweak the exact ranges of the parameters that that you want to sweep over. So if you have a tree model and you know that the trees between the trees that between the minimum number of examples of 50 and 150 are the best for you based on some intuition of the problem, you can go ahead and customize it. And then the sweep parameters module will use only those ranges to sweep over. So that's one like new thing that we added, which is not really evident from much of the UI changes, but it's actually fairly powerful.
Great, thank you. Well, I think unless there's any other questions that want to come in, the chat box has been very busy there, and Hai has been answering all of them. Unless there's any other questions, I think that about concludes our time, unless our presenters have anything else they'd like to share for today. All right. Well, thank you for joining us.
I would just
go ahead.
Sorry. I would just encourage everybody go to azure.com/ml and try it out. And I assume everybody's got a Microsoft ID already. Again, you know, it doesn't cost you a penny, but you get to experience full feature capabilities of what we are demoing, which really is probably 5% of what product has to offer today. So thank you.
Very good. Well, thanks for joining us, and many thanks to Hai and Sudarshan for sharing this excellent knowledge. And many of you asked during the presentation, yes, the slides on the webinar will be made available on demand afterwards. I know there were a couple of audio issues that happened here and there, so you'll be able to listen to that again. We'll make that available, I believe, tomorrow. And as Hai said, if you'd like more information, feel free to visit azure.com/ml. So thanks for joining us, and that concludes our webinar for today.
Thank you very much, Jason.